Why did God wait until they were so old before he gave them this child? The same reason that most of the turning points in the Old Covenant happen with the birth of someone who is Akerah, who is sterile. That's the mystery of the Akerah. And then the queen of all the Akerot is Mary, who gives birth by the overshadowing of the Holy Spirit. She gives birth to God, who is Jesus. And so this is the beginning of that economy, of that way of dealing. So Abraham says, you see, God says, don't call her Sarai, call her Sarah. We're still pondering that, because from all our information, there's just two ways of spelling the same name. So what the significance, and there's always a significance of name change. Maybe we just don't have enough evidence yet linguistically to figure out why. But anyway, the name means princess in either form. So, this promise, God promised this. And he kept Abraham waiting until he was nearly 100. And Sarah was in her 90s. And then he acted. And that act is the beginning of salvation history. In a way, the beginning of salvation is Abraham. If you watch Genesis, you see we go through, and finally, it's this succession, the successively greater invasion of evil in the world after Adam and Eve's sin, and then all the plagues and all that. And the final great sin is Babylon. Let us make a tower that reaches up to heaven and then we're safe. It's the organized attempt to run the world without God. For we're living in the Tower of Babel. And so God comes down and scatters them. Now they can't understand one another. Now you see the root of human misunderstanding is rebellion against God. Lack of trust in God. You see, there might be another flood. Even God promised there wasn't going to be another flood that would destroy the world. You never know. You never know. We better be safe. We'll build this tower where we're safe on our terms. And that explains most of what goes under the rubric of social action. It's a wonderful thing to do, but the hubris, the pride that animates it, I will take care of this. And so that's why they're scattered. Now, all the other tragedies, after they happen, like Cain kills Abel, Cain is going to be punished. Nevertheless, he's given a sign that no one can kill him. You see, there's always a remedy. After Babylon, things just go on. So-and-so begot so-and-so, and so-and-so begot so-and-so, until finally, in chapter 12, and God said to Abram, Lech Lecha, go. I will make you a nomad of faith. You go where I show you. And he goes with his childless wife. And then, as you know, in chapter 15, God promises Abraham, I will give you a child. Those, you see, those stars out there, they're not as numerous as your progeny is going to be. And Abraham believed him. And that was counted to him as righteousness. Now Paul builds his whole theology of righteousness on that text, right? Just read Romans 4. God promises us. Do we believe him? You see? That's the right way. Now, what God has promised us now, salvation forever through the death and resurrection of his Son. And if we believe him, we are justified. It is counted to us as righteousness, as justice. And that is sealed by baptism, by which we are plunged into that same death and receive all the benefits of having died out of love for God the Father, because they're given to us. They're Jesus's, and they're given to us. You see, all of that is in a way, you see, chiaroscuro, it's all here. That's why Paul, and as I say in Romans 4, his whole argument is based on Abraham's response to God's promise. And Abraham believed God. And so here, now, we're up in chapter 17, and still no child. And so, this is so Semitic. Then Abraham said to God, "Let but Ishmael live on in your favor." I understand, God, you said that, but you know, sometimes we get carried away, maybe. Let Ishmael, you see, I don't know if you've ever lived with Semites, but that's the way they, instead of saying, "I don't believe you," they say, you know, and so that's what this is. "Let Ishmael live forever." That'll be great, God. And he said, "Not that one. One from your body and Sarah's body." And that's the, so it's a, well then what about Ishmael? "I will make him fertile and multiply him exceedingly. He shall become the father of 12 chieftains, and I will make of him a great nation." And that's all the Semites who are not, and from that part of the world anyway, who are not descended from Abraham, are descended from Ishmael. And they haven't still worked that out, as you know, just pick up the newspaper. It's all with us, is what I'm saying. Even though the completion is with us. That's why you see the fathers of the church pondered, read, prayed, were mystically enlightened to understand this working out of God's plan. But anyway, this is the first action of Jesus after the Sermon on the Mount. Chapters 5, 6, 7 are the Sermon on the Mount, right? Chapter 8, the very first thing, this text, Matthew 8, 1 to 4, is a miracle of healing and of cleansing. It puts the seal on those three chapters. If the word of the Lord can heal that leper, the word of the Lord, if we take it into our hearts and obey it, can change us, make us holy. We can't do it, but we can accept that word and say yes, and then do our best, and the rest is up to the Lord. And he can cleanse our leprosy.